The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Heumann. It's time for our Vox Screen Stocks. Of course, we use a screener to pick out certain metrics, criteria, to maybe get rid of the trash, really, John. Isn't that what screen is about? To get rid of the stuff you don't want.
It's an ideas generation tool. So it's looking through the market, getting rid of stuff that doesn't fit certain criteria, using criteria to find stuff that might be worth further research.
Okay, and what's the screener this week then?
So this one is quality at a reasonable price. So it's a good one because what we're looking for are companies that are demonstrating quality characteristics. And this particular one is using various profitability and return metrics. So we use return on capital employed, which shows how well a company is using its capital. And we want that to be above 10. And we are looking at operating margins as well. So we want companies that are demonstrating good profitability. In this case, we're looking for margins above 20%. And then we've got a PE cutoff, so we don't want anything that's too expensive either. And we're looking for companies that are actually growing the top line as well.
Okay, cool. And how many have we got? Probably about 15 stocks here. I've heard quite a few of them. I looked into recently, which is in there, PayPoint, and I remember that being quite well followed years ago, but I haven't heard a lot from it of late. I don't know why that is. Any idea? Do you know much about PayPoint?
Yeah, I mean, they used to do the sort of bill payment you used to go into the local news agent, and there was your payment service. Decent company. Payments was really popular. I think payments as a sector, it tends to happen in markets. You get these sort of ideas that everyone latches onto, and I think the one we're seeing most prominently at the moment, of course, is AI. So, AI, anything with AI is off to the races.
I know it's not.
Go on. A few years ago, it was payments.
I think payments have changed now because a lot of people, I assume, are using apps rather than having to go into stores and stuff. So maybe the heat has come out of that.
You'd think so. It's a strange one, though. There was a company I was looking at recently. It's very easy to write off these sort of older technologies because something new has come along. And the one that's been surprising me recently is what was formerly known as PhotoMe. It's now Me Group, and they do basically laundrettes and, as the name implies, photo booths, and they're doing all right. They're bouncing back. Photo booths have not gone away. I've used them recently to get a passport photo.
That's odd, isn't it? Because now you can literally stand against your wall and take a picture with your smartphone.
Except that when you try and do that and you put your application in, they reject the photo because the lighting's not quite right or whatever it might be. And they've sort of employed some digital tech that means that you've got this it's almost like a cloud-based record with your photo in it, and then you can use it for anything. If you've got to apply for a new driving license, a new passport, actually quite useful. So I think sometimes our older technologies get written off for dead because something new has come along, and I think that's a mistake that investors often make. I mean, the beauty of this screen, particularly in today's markets, is that we have had a fairly savage sell-off, and that sell-off has in many cases been driven by what's described as rating compression. So companies that were great companies that everyone was chasing, the PE ratios, the valuation metrics have been pushed up to silly levels. A lot of those have come back quite a lot. So now you can pick up really good companies that everyone was once chasing a lot cheaper than you could a while back. This is a predominant characteristic, particularly of the UK market at the moment. Lots of quality out there, January sale prices.
Yeah. I'm trying to predict what you're going for because thinking you quite like the picks and shovels kind of stuff, and I can't see anything there.
I like this list. This is a good list, and I actually struggled to narrow it down. I like Bioventix, which is up there. Bioventix has long been an investor favourite. That is a classic, as you say. A drug discovery picks and shovels company provides monoclonal sheep antibodies used in many forms of healthcare. delivery. But it's, you know, essentially without the risk, and it's scaled up that business in terms of sales without really having to scale up its costs. So it's an amazing company. You know, it has at times been trading on very expensive multiples, now trading at 20, 22 and a bit times, and it's, you know, it's growing, but not spectacularly. But, you know, it's one you could put in your portfolio and never worry about.
Yeah. I'm not going for that.
Okay.
Dot Digital, are you going for that?
No, I don't really like Dot Digital. I can't remember why. I looked at it in the past, but it's one that I've always avoided. I don't think it's that cheap. I've looked at Impax Asset Management, which I like, which is a really good asset manager focused on the sort of environmental side of things. Really like that. But, you know, growing its assets under management, but again, not massively cheap. And, you know, it's a bit out of favour, that sector. What I'm actually going for is EMIS.
Okay. So what are they on about?
So EMIS sells basically systems that help essentially primary care operators, that would be GPs mainly, manage their patients. And, you know, the healthcare system that we have, you know, is in a bit of a mess. And we wrote a big piece about, you know, other tech companies that are really getting involved in helping the NHS basically manage the incredible post-COVID mess that there is, you know, patient backlogs, you know, weeks to try and get a GP appointment. So any company that's doing anything to really support that, so improving that situation, excuse me, I really like. And EMIS has been around for a long time. It's a leader. It's got about 60% of the primary care market in terms of managing these systems, patient records, that kind of stuff, prescribing. And it got bid for. And I must admit, I sort of stopped paying attention once it got bid for about 20 quid a share, a little bit less. The CMA, the Competition and Markets Authority, has basically wanted to take a closer look at this deal, and the shares have come right back.
What happened to the share price? Because it's a hell of an ugly looking chart.
Have a look at it. Like, yeah.
The 17th of June, let me just move that thing out of the way a sec. 17th of June, I'm assuming that's when the bid came in. It went up by 46%, pretty much from 13.10 up to, let me just move this thing out of the way, to 19 quid. And then it's gone along from there, June, back in 2022. They went along, just trading that range, little tight range there, until March 2023, 31st of March this year, and then it was a drop off a cliff. That's when the CMA got involved, was it? And then it went up again.
Yeah, exactly.
It dropped off a cliff again in May. So it's now done it. It's back to where it was pre-bid, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. So the company that's buying it is essentially a bidco that's put together by basically a subsidiary of a company called United Health, you know, big American healthcare company. There are competition concerns. You know, EMIS has a dominant position, as I said, in the GP market in the UK. And, you know, the big co put some remedies forward that would hopefully address some of the CMA's concern, which the CMA has rejected. And, you know, here are the problems. So, you know, the bid is still on the table, but it's been pushed out a very long way. So, you know, this could rumble on.
Yeah, they had a long stop date, didn't they? To end of this month now, June, has been pushed out to June 2024, the long stop date there. So I don't know what's going to happen there. It's just,
Exactly. It's a bit of a mess. But, you know, to my mind, if you've got a bidder coming in wanting to pay, you know, nearly 20 quid a share for this company, which is without doubt a niche market leader in what it does, you know, it's still out there acquiring, so it's beefing up its proposition, made four acquisitions over the course of the year, really strengthening its position in the market. It enjoys really, you know, as I say, fat operating margins, revenues are still growing from an already large base. You know, it's a really, really good company. You know, this bidder did not come along for EMIS for no reason. Got a lot of cash in the bank. You know, it's obviously had to spend a bit. The acquisition has caused it a few, you know, they cost money, these things. Buying and sort of any part of this sort of corporate finance process cost money. So the cash has come down, but it's still got, you know, 45, 46 million quid in the bank. You know, EPS still growing. I just, what's not to like? You know, I do find it odd. I know, you know, we shouldn't mock the CMA for what it does, but it does make some strange decisions from time to time. You know, this is important software. And, you know, I do sometimes find it strange that companies get penalised for their success. And that sort of seems to be what's happening here.
Yeah, and so what, the company is from America. Is that the issue they've got? Is it with this takeover from a different country? I mean, if it was a company from the UK, would it be such a problem, do you think?
I don't know for sure. But what I would suggest is just that, you know, as I say, Emis's market share is great, and presumably, you know, if you combine that with United Healthcare's business, you know, it's strengthening the markets gets greater still. Mm. But you know, as I say, you know, there are some real problems that need solving in the NHS, and this is one of those companies that could solve it. And you know, I think that, you know, whatever happens with the CMA's outcome, you know, it highlights what a great company this is. And, you know, whether a deal goes through or not, you know, I think, you know, at the current price, which I think values the shares at, you know, just over 20 times earnings for a really, really nice company, it's definitely worth a look.
Yeah. God, it's nuts, that share price. It's literally, like, it's almost like, you know, a Lego here, where it's like a straight up, straight across, straight down. It's like, yeah, that kind of, but yeah, it's an odd shape right there. Okay, it's Emis there. I'm going with Belvoir. Oh, it's Belvoir.
I looked at them as well.
I know, yeah, I don't know where they get a name from. It's very pretentious, Belvoir Lettings. Well, Belvoir Group, and they're basically a franchise. You know, they operate a nationwide property franchise group with 487 offices across 7 brands, specialising residential lettings, property management, residential sales, and property-related financial services. Yeah, so they manage 75,500 properties. And if you look at the growth, you know, over the last, since 2017, compound annual growth of 24.4% in revenue, and even net profit compound annual growth rate of 20%. Looking at the return on capital above 20%, there are PE of, you know, 11, pretty much. Growth hasn't been spectacular in the last year, but it's still, top line has been growing, but for the interims of 12%, 14% for a full year, free cash flow growth 22%. But, you know, you're thinking, okay, but probably the market at the moment, it's in a bit of a dreadful state. But there's obviously two sides to this. There's lettings and, you know, sales. So the lettings, they're saying, is very buoyant, because the rents are going up, people are trying to find places that people can't get mortgages. If you can get a mortgage, you're lucky, but if you can't, you've got to rent. And they say in their AGM trading statement, the board is pleased to report the trading to date is in line with management's expectations for the year to 31st of December 2023. The group's performance continues to be very resilient despite the uncertainty in the housing market created by the mini budget in Q4 22 and subsequent increases in interest rates. And they say growth in our recurring lettings income is benefiting from ongoing high levels of tenant demand, with rents on new tenants increased by 9.9%. And so it seemed quite resilient. Like I said, they've had a very good track record. And I do like sort of, you know, franchisees, because they're quite efficient. And if you can get that going, the margins are very good. And if you look at their margins, you know, gross is 60, operating 26, net margins 22%, pretty much. Free cash flow margin 18, like I said, return on capital is 22%. And so they've had a bit of a sell-off in sentiment with the rest of the market. But nevertheless, they've sort of rallied a little bit. Where did they rally from? 27th of March. So they went down. They are, what's the market cap, by the way? Let's scroll back.
80 million.
Yeah, 80 million. 80 million. Yeah, yeah. And they sort of sold, they sort of peaked like everything else. Top of the bull market, August 21, pretty much. It hit £3.23. And then they've come down to the low of 160. That's in March this year. And they've rallied from 160 to sort of, rallied very strongly for some reason, up to like 238. They've come back to 215 now. And in fact, I'm just trying to see the date of that. It was the 28th of March. What was that date?
Well, they had some final results on the 27th of March.
Oh, that was final results. Yes. Yeah, so, oh, there we are. So
there you go.
And that's always a good sign in my mind, when you get a rally off final results. Actually, so many companies of late just drop off a cliff with their final results. And in fact, one of the companies I hold, XP Factory, released final results recently. They rallied and people sold into it. And I was talking to Paul Hill about this. And it's not a bad sign when they rally off final results. And then in this market, you get people taking profit underwater maybe, and it comes back down. What you don't want is the company's share price to drop off a cliff after final results, having no rally whatsoever. They rallied and they continue to rally. And I suppose people thought they're undervalued there because they rallied very strongly. And you can get that, can't you? Sometimes, you know, companies just get sold. It's a sentiment around the properties, lettings, all that stuff gets sold into. And then they release final results and, oh, that's not bad. And people start diving in then, you know.
But, yeah, every you know, the babies get thrown out with bathwater in markets like this. Well, there's something you mentioned there that actually applies to EMIS as well, and that's recurring revenues. And I think, you know, that's a very, very useful thing to look out for in a market like this. It basically gives you know, any would-be investor a bit of comfort, you know, that the future is okay, you know, that it's not relying on, you know, starting the year from zero and having to work to keep signing, you know. So that recurring revenue thing is really important. I mean, the housing market is iffy.
It is, yes, it is. But part of me thinks, you know, in fact, do you know what? I literally, this week, got out of MJ Gleeson. I've been having a wipeout of all my stocks. It hit certain levels. I always set chart alerts and something. And if it starts breaking down below a certain level, I think, well, I'm going to get out now. That's it. I don't care, because I just saw that. Now, I was talking about this to Paul again, but the AIM-ALL share, we are literally about 7 points away from the October lows. And I think, and the outlook at the moment seems to be getting worse. You know, it's like central banks could keep interest rates higher for longer. We're expecting an economic slowdown. I think the EY Club is saying they expect a recession in UK, Europe, and US. Maybe a mild one, but it's going to happen, a recession. And generally, the markets don't bottom before a recession is announced. So all's down, like in a historical recession indicator. You've got the inversion of the yield curve. So to me, I think we're going to have quite a few months again of hard work in the markets. And, you know, I do think, you know, bear markets provide that opportunity to get in cheap. It is the worry that comes with that. That gives you the discount, you know. When it starts to get better and you leave it, say, 4 or 5 months, you've missed the aggressive rally at the bottom. So I think with good companies that are good businesses, like a lot of the house builders, no debt, and they are good businesses, and growth will return, those kind of things, if you don't get overexposed, but just, you know, have a little bit of a position, because you know they're going to return to their former glory. It may take a while. But, you know, they will get there. I think at the moment, we haven't seen them revisit their lows yet. They've bounced and they've gone rolled over a little bit. But, I mean, I just wanted to say, do you know what? I just wanted lots of cash so I could take advantage of any more drawdowns in the markets, which I think could happen.
That's true. I tend to agree. You know, I do think that, you know, the sort of sentiment improved after October, but you know, as I say, it doesn't take a lot to rattle nerves again. Germany went into recession.
Yeah.
You know, last week, and you know, there are some really sort of worrying things out there. UK inflation is sticky. There are some real issues in the UK housing market, which you know, really create uncertainty. But I agree, you know, and this is the whole point of this screen. If, you know, things are being sold off, you know, this quality at a reasonable price screen helps us look for things that are robust businesses that perhaps have been caught up in the wholesaling fever and can be bought more cheaply. So, you know, don't worry about, you know, them falling a little bit, because these are companies that are not going to disappear. Actually, while you were on the subject of Belvoir, there was another one that I wanted to look at that I hadn't really looked at before, but it's a very similar type of company, Property Franchise Group. So I think here we have two examples of, you know, very similar companies in that property space that are, you know, very strong, you know, franchise owners that have just been caught up in negative sentiment. And yeah, they are worth owning. You know, people are always going to need houses. And in fact, resolving the housing crisis, just like the NHS crisis, is going to need people like Belvoir and Property Franchise to be in the middle of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, they've got, like I said, last set of results, they did 33 million top line, or 33.7, 14% growth that was. But the management fees, service fees, which is recurring, pretty much 11 million, so a third of that, you know, in game is like always going to be there. And like I said, with tenancies going up, Yeah, so it's going to continue, you know, so, because, like I say, if people can't get mortgages, they've got to rent, haven't they? So, they've got up both sides, you know, if start selling, they get stuff from the quick commission for that. But, of course, the letting side, which the management fees continue.
The data suggests that house prices are weakening, with the biggest selling pressure coming from buy-to-let landlords who are realising it's somewhat uneconomical. But on the other end, but transaction numbers are up, presumably, because you've got other people on the side of those transactions. So, as you say, you know, if you are, as an estate agency group, are on both sides of that equation, then you've got that natural hedge, which is good.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cheers for that, John, and we'll speak you next week.
Good talking. Speak soon, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.